Going to about last year, looking at the Bible as various things, just trying to demonstrate just the Bible as the Word of God. One of the evidences that it's God's Word is that it covers so many subjects and in more detail than usually man puts together. And I kind of cut it short. I had a few others to go, and I'm going to insert this one now. Because like I said last week, we're in like a three-part series. Last week was premarital relationships. This one has to do with the family. And then next week, marriage, divorce, remarriage. We're going to cover aftermath of some kind of disasters. So it kind of goes that way. But there's something else here that this subject ties into. If we get this thing going. In no other literary work will one find such a complete coverage of the family, not only from how to make it work, but also from a historical perspective. I mean, as we're looking now and people are arguing for, keeping the family together and all that, they're trying to be logical, they're trying to, use a little bit of evidence and stuff like that, where, I've gone online at times and go, here's the authority for it, guys, God gave us the family. I mean, historically, it's always been here. It's not like somebody came up with it, in the past, thought it was a good idea, and it kind of took hold in all the countries. It was designed by God. It's from God. It's an institution from God. It's a foundational component for both. Well, let me put it this way. Another way it fits in, when we look at, the individual institutions, I mean, the Bible is not just for an individual. But God has set up other institutions also besides the church. The government is God's institution. The family's God's institution. And we have a tendency to compartmentalize them, but they fit together. I mean, they're an interwoven fabric to keep man happy, protected, guarded, whatever. So even as we go through, we might mix a little of other stuff into it, but keep in mind that they depend on one another. The material in this lesson is by no means exhaustive, but enough examples will be given so you can get an idea of the scope of it as we go through this. But as our nation begins to discard the concept of the nuclear family, and there's people arguing against it, the government's arguing against it, the tax laws now favor the single individual. They used to favor the family unit. Now it's more advantageous to be single or divorced or whatever. One mustn't buy its explanations, for they are wrong, they're destructive, not only for the nation itself, but also for the well-being, protection, and the happiness of the citizens. Already statistics are coming out. People from broken homes make up over 60% of the crimes out there. It does mark people when you come from dysfunctional families. You haven't got the role models, you haven't got the proper discipline, you've got taught values, right and wrong. Yeah, it's going to have its effect. It's always going to come out, so that's a part of it. But even like when you start arguing logically, even heathens as far back as Plato argued for, hey, let's keep the family together or the Roman Republic's going to fall apart. And the reason is because one English anthropologist has traced the disappearance of 80 civilizations to the breakdown of the family. And now, how does that happen? Before we get into this, here's the logic of it. When people become more and more selfish and self-centered, they don't care about anything else. When all they want is their drugs, when all they want is their sexual recreation or whatever, they don't care about loving another individual to commit their life to them. They don't care to get married. They don't care to have children. Okay? They don't care about the child. They don't care about the family. They don't care about the neighborhood. They don't care about that and the community that protects such a unit. They're not going to care about the nation. So it all falls apart. Okay? Men who do not have a love of country and family and stuff like that will not die for it. They won't protect it. That's the way it, that's the way it is. I mean, we saw that in the first Gulf War, where Saddam Hussein promised us the mother of all tank battles. And what we got was a clear display is you can't force people to fight for you. They were throwing down their rifles and, you know, welcoming us. Okay? I hate to see this country do the same thing, throwing down its rifles to welcome in an invader. So these are the things we've got to, yeah. As we go through this, we try to build up, you know, what God says is the family. Okay, think about your responsibility to it. Okay? To everything. Your responsibility to God, yourself, the family, the country. It's all woven together. And if you think you can divorce yourself from that, then, you know, you'll get a lot of people that will follow you and everything goes down the drain. Okay? You owe it to yourself to do the right thing. Okay, so just looking at this, first of all, we're going to look at the marriage law. Okay, it's not just an institution that seems like a good idea. While some nations reject the family model and perish into history, many civilizations have embraced it. I mean, why has China, India, South America survived for so long? I mean, they've gone through various kinds of governments, but basically they've preserved the family unit. Okay, so the nation's still there, and in these cases, growing stronger. But who first conceived of such a unit? Was it a common sense thing beginning, you know, with just two people getting together and going, okay, let's have kids and figure out some way to do it? No. They had help. They had guidance. There is a law of marriage, a law that pre-exists Christianity, Hinduism, whatever other culture, Judaism, and even the patriarchal societies. Even if you go as far back as Adam, you know, there was a marriage law that predated Adam. It was a design of God even before man. It was more than just a good idea, it was a divine command. Matthew 19. Okay. These are, I'm going to go through these kind of quickly. Just pull out, you know, one thing. I'm going to get into more in detail next week. But as the Pharisees address Jesus, he goes, can you get divorced for any reason? And he goes, wait a minute. Have you not read? In fact, what he goes back to is original intent by God. And don't look at the Mosaic law. Don't look how you butchered it. Go for the very beginning. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife. The two shall become one flesh. Okay? Consequently, they're no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Okay? This goes in good with next week. Okay? But, you know, even further, in Romans 7, a lot of preachers overlook this passage. But do you not know, Paul says, that the law has jurisdiction over a person as long as he lives? What law? Not the Mosaic law. Well, that one too. But the jurisdiction he's talking about is the marriage law. Okay? As long as you're married, and you're married because of God's law, he has joined you together. Okay? As long as both of you are alive, you're under that bond of marriage. Okay? And you're not released from it until you die. In fact, the other passage, you know, one place where they come to Jesus and go, okay, this woman had, you know, seven husbands. When she dies, which one does she belong to? And he goes, you don't understand. You know, there is no marriage in heaven. Yeah? Because when this life is over, there's no concept of marriage. There's no reason for it. I want to get through some of these because it's kind of a long thing. Therefore, I want young widows to get married, rear children, keep house, give the enemy no occasion for a reproach. Okay. It's a good, solid unit. It's something everybody needs. Did you ever have nightmares about, you know, as a kid being left behind? You know, your parents drove off and left you someplace. I've run into a lot of people that have that. Even if it hasn't happened, you know, they'll have nightmares about it. Okay. There's a reason for the family. You know, it should be a secure place where you can come home to. I mean, not just for the kids, you know, for the parents also. I mean, the husband's had a hard day at the office or something like that. He wants to come home to where a place he can relax, be with people who love him. The wife feels the same way. You know, they want this little citadel. You know, even the law considers the home the castle, you know, and can be protected. You know, the law protects the protection of the castle. It should be there for a child too. You know, hard day at school, being beat up by the bully, you know, chased home. Glad to be home. Okay. Protection. Same for, you know, widows. You know, if you're widowed young, remarry. Okay. Get back into a better relationship. In fact, this is where it gets important too, you know, with this. One economist traced the rise of socialism in this country with, now don't take this wrong, ladies, the women getting the right to vote. What? Here's the reason. Because the guys were jerks. Getting married, or not even getting married, having children, not being there, the women needed something to fall back on. They needed something to protect them. And when they got the vote, they can vote in bigger government to protect them. Okay. If you don't like socialism, the way the place is going, gentlemen, chances are it's your fault. People, the women were turning to the only place they could for protection. Okay. If the men had manned up and take the responsibility of being a good provider, being there, you know, to take care of the wife, the kids, and everything else, we wouldn't have a lot of these problems. Okay, responsibility of husbands. To each component of the family, God has furnished guidelines. He gets into it. When you look at marriage books and stuff like that, they generally handle the husband or the wife, you know, whatever. But God gets into every aspect of it. To the husband, okay, God in his wisdom wanted to ensure that man, generically speaking, you know, people, would get the most out of life and designed for man to be involved in situations that would help him mature. Okay. This is a reason why, you know, one of the reasons why you become married. So you start growing up. You get to know people. You have to interrelate with them. You have to negotiate. You have to work out things. You know, serious problems. You know, finances, raising the kids, all this kind of stuff. It makes you grow up. A lot of the people that are out there that haven't done that, you know, haven't grown up yet. Go to your 20-year class, you know, high school reunion. You know, evidence galore. Yeah, of guys that haven't grown up. Let's see what we got here. This is all in preparation for man actually learning to relate to his Creator. God gives us situations, so we now know how what it means to be responsible, to be grateful, to know where to go for resources. You know, it's a learning process for us. Even if at times you want to pull your hair out or bang your head against the wall because of what's going on, it's a good thing. God meant it to be that way. 1 Peter 3:7, you husbands likewise live with your wives in an understanding way, with a weaker vessel. Okay? Grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers aren't hindered. If you're not getting along with your wives, chances are your prayers aren't going anywhere. Ephesians 5, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church. Okay, and again, we're not talking emotional here. If there's a problem or if there's something that needs fixing or whatever, this is what love is. It looks at what, it comprehends the situation and looks to make it, you know, right or stronger or whatever. This is the guy's responsibility. Okay. And with that, the man's supposed to love the wife. Notice that. You see, let the wife see that you respect the husband. He can't ask for it. She's got to give it to him. The responsibility is hers. Now, maybe she might have to do something also to fix that so that she does respect him. Husbands, love your wives. Do not be embittered against them. Okay, there is a difference. Okay, primarily, we're 90%, 95% the same. But there is a difference. Hormonally, whatever, you know, not saying that, you know, men are smarter than women, that's been proved wrong. You know, but she does have to labor under different things than the husband does. So we need to understand that. Just as everybody's got their own baggage they have to deal with. Problems, demons, well, whatever. So even another person of the same gender, you have to be understanding. Responsibility of the wives, even as one looks at the divine model of the family, it is to be noted that the husband does not lord it over the wife. Let that sink in. I've seen husbands that think, well, you know, I'm the head of the family, therefore I got to, you know, be abusive or, you know, force it or whatever. I'm not getting respect, so, you know, bang the wife off the wall. God never gives us that model. Doesn't do it. God has not given the man the authority to abuse his mate in any way, but merely to love and understand. You want to be a leader? Find out what you need to do to lead. Okay? But it's your responsibility. To offset this, the wife is not made to submit to the husband, but she's directed by God to submit herself. Okay? It's a military term. If you go into the military, you might find yourself, you know, one of the lower ranks. Yeah. You always find this. Maybe the sergeants and the corporals run the place. If you can find some old top in there that's been in there since the Civil War, he generally knows more about battle and everything else than maybe a shave-tail lieutenant. The lieutenant has the authority over the sergeant. That's the way the structure is. But the lieutenant would be pretty smart if they're just going into battle to listen to the sergeant, who's been through a lot of them. So a lot of times, a man might be married to a wife that, you know, is smarter in some ways. Has a knowledge of, you know, finances or whatever. Be good, you know, or be smart of you as the head of the house to listen to what she has to say. I mean, she's supplied by God to be a help for you. To compliment you, to supplement you, to be there beside you. Okay? That's what she's meant for. Now, this takes nothing away from the wife. In fact, like we said, we might be more skilled. But note that even though, here's what it gets down to. Although there might be negotiations, you might be listening, whatever, the man still has to man up. Okay? A good commander listens to everything, all the input and everything else, but it's still up to him to make the decision. And he has to make the right decision. So hopefully he gets the right advice, the input. But notice this. Note that even though it was Eve who sinned first, it's always Adam that's tagged with the responsibility of it. Or 1 Corinthians 11:3, but I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man. The man is the head of the woman. And God is the head of Christ. Christ is under somebody too. All of us has to understand what our position is. You know, we're, whether it's the family, you're in the workplace, you're the employee, you got a boss who employs you. You're under him. You're in the service, you got officers over you. Generally, you have somebody over you someplace. Okay? This is part of our society. We learn through all these various institutions, you know, where our place is, and to respect those around us. Even in government, honor the king. Even if he was Nero at the time Peter was writing. Respect him, respect his due. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. There's a lot of here where it injects this one phrase, as to the Lord. Okay, yeah. You don't have to, wives, you don't have to be submissive. In fact, anybody. If something, you know, who's ever over you is giving you orders that are contrary to God, you listen to God first. Even Peter and John, before the Sanhedrin, I mean, they're talking to the Jewish Supreme Court, and they're told not to preach the gospel. And the response was, you be the judge, we need to listen to God first. So in the military, if anybody's, you know, in a business or whatever, somebody's telling you to do something that would go against God's will, you have the authority to refuse. They may not like it, and they may do something about it, but you're standing on your authority. God-given rights. Okay? The wife also, she's to be subject to her husband, but she has the God-given right to say no if the husband is trying to do something that's illegal or immoral, that goes against God. Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. All this relationship should be in the Lord. Just as we're in the church, we're in Christ and working things out. In the family, we're in the Lord and we're doing it. When we're in the government, participating in that as a citizen or whatever, it should be in the Lord. Part of this that probably the ladies chuckle at, you know, whatever, once in a while. I think it's before this. No, well, the last one. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Right? And you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened or by fear. How many of you ladies address your husbands as Lord? Or even think of him as that? I'm getting smiles. Okay. You can have a good time together, you can smile, whatever, but when push comes to shove, yeah, he better be recognized as the Lord of the house, or you're in trouble with God. Now, this kind of relationship, yeah, is also to parents, the children. Again, God, the Bible covers all of these. Parents need to do more than with Mary than just be fruitful and multiply. You've got responsibility. You bring little lives in this world, you've got a responsibility to take care of them. They are assigned the task of properly raising those whom they bring into the world. The major course of instruction needs to be to present their child as a faithful worshiper to God. I mean, if you got together in a family, husband and wife, to serve God better, which is what the intent of marriage, if you bring a child in, it should be a part of that intent. That mission statement, whatever you want to put it. If the child is raised and it becomes not a lover of God, but a lover of the world, you've just failed miserably to the fullest extent in being a parent. Now, there's always extenuating. So we're talking probabilities. You know, if you've done everything you can, you know, I know sometimes you get a little wild seed, and they, you know, the more you beat them, the more, you know, stringent they become. Some people are like that. At some point, when they grow up and become close to adult, they still have to make a decision. Okay, so don't beat yourself, you know, over the head, you know, if you've done all you can and your child goes bad. Then it's the child's decision. Okay, what we have in the scriptures as an example is Josiah. He had some of the worst parents and grandparents. Grandparents, you know, Manasseh, Ahab, you know, whatever. He didn't have a chance if you look at his, you know, stock. But at the age of 8, he decided to serve God. Kids can make those decisions, and it doesn't matter what their upbringing was. Fathers, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Main point. Fathers, do not exaggerate your children so they may not lose heart. Work it out so they begin to look forward to services, being with God, praying to Him. Deuteronomy, hear, O Lord, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all soul, all your might. This is the Shema, beginning, you know, of parents teaching their children these words I command you today. Teach them diligently in your, to your sons. Talk with them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. They constantly put God, the nature of God, the help of God, the love of God, constantly before them. If you have a Bible study with your children once a week and then you send them off to these godless schools for 8-9 hours a day, guess what you're going to get? Push comes to shove, get them out of the school and homeschool them. You know, to ensure, or take a more active view in the schools about the curriculum and stuff. I can't believe some of the things I'm hearing that are going on in these things, even among 5 years old. The Proverbs, the wisdom literature is primarily geared for young people. So you've got an instruction manual as parents to go by. Proverbs 1:4, to give prudence to the naive, to the young knowledge and discretion. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he'll go, and even when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Or Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound up in the child, and the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. Over and over again, you're getting instruction. You know, either how to raise your child, or it's instruction directly to the child, you know, to make them wise. The responsibility of the children, they have a role in the family as well. God covers this. First, they too have a responsibility to obey their parents. They need to realize that these parents are the two people that love them most in this world. If you can't pay them respect, you're in big trouble. If you can't learn to love someone who loves you so much that they've sacrificed so much to give you food, shelter, clothing, and education, love, you know, patting the boo-boos and everything else, and that doesn't sink into you, and you're ungrateful, you deserve what you get in this life and the next. Because you're learning from a young age how to love God. Because God does all that. He loves you. He cares for you. He sacrificed his son for you. And if you can't show any gratitude for that, again, you get what you deserve. They have jobs to do, not only the chores around the house as they fulfill their part of the family, but they have the job of going to school, of learning. I mean, this is where history comes in. It wasn't but 100 years ago where children didn't go to school. They worked in the factories to 14 hours, very young. We turned our society around to protect the children, to make sure they had a free education, not only until K to 12, but also now you can get it, going into college. To give you a lift up, to give you, security in this life. And the kids are dropping out. Big problem here. The kids aren't owning up to their responsibility. You need to learn a trade. You need to learn something to make a career. Because, you need to support the Lord's work, primarily. You need to support your parents when they get older and frail. And you need to provide a future for your children. Anytime you unplug yourself from that responsibility, you just messed up the whole system. The older folks will get on the death panels. The younger folks will be aborted. That's our society because people have dropped their responsibility. They're also responsible to grow and mature. Much of the wisdom literature is written for the benefit of young people, giving them guidance. Parents are to help them through this in a proper manner. Both are held responsible for the outcome. Responsibility of children, obey your parents again in the Lord. Again, if your parents are trying to take you down a line that's against God's will, you can rebel. Give attention to my wisdom, incline your ear to the understanding that you may observe discretion, and your lips may preserve knowledge. Observe the commandment of your father and do not forsake the teaching of your mother. They're there for you. You get some of this on the responsibility of the parents too. Listen to your father who begot you and do not despise your mother. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Our whole job in life is to be pleasing to God. To see what pleases him. Ephesians 5, 8 through 10. Walking in the light is trying to discover what's pleasing to God. That's an adult responsibility. That's a child's responsibility. And finally, the relationship of the divine and marriage. All the institutions and relationships that God requires of man are interwoven. We covered that to begin with. They supplement one another. This is where the wisdom of God shines. Our culture wants to dismantle this whole thing. Get rid of God, get rid of the family, get rid of it all. This is most evident as Paul writes of the relationship of marriage and the church. Christ as the bridegroom sets an example how to properly address a marriage, wife and children. Most of all, through this whole series, we see that God has been working in relationship with all of his creation, all of his people, all of his institutions. They're not just set up to interwove, but they're set up so that God can help us through them in every way possible. Ephesians 5, the mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each individual among you love his own wife even as himself. Let the wife see to it that she loves her husband or respects her husband. Okay. Again, all part of it. And then finally, notice, however in the Lord, neither is a woman independent of man or a man independent of a woman. This is the feminist movement. Yeah, this drives them up the wall. Most of you young people don't remember, what's her name? Came up with the concept of a man without a woman, or a woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle. Where do you get scientific proof for that? Yeah, it's as inane as most of the other comparisons they do. I mean, God says we're interrelated. We're interrelated. The man has the responsibility of taking care of the woman, and the man can't lord it over her because he comes from a woman. You can't get rid of either side of this. God intended us for to be together and to work together. Notice, as far as the woman originates from man, so also the man has his birth through the woman. But all things originate from God. All of these institutions, all the things we have in life, all the good things are God's gift to us. But we have a responsibility to commit ourselves into working it the way God intended. For maximum protection, security, peace of mind, whatever else good things we can get out of life. These are the things that God has given us to ensure that we have that, all of his blessings. Okay, invitation. We all struggle in these relationships. God intended us to. He intended that we look to others and we look to him for help. So if it's anything we can do to help, there's something the elders or the teacher, the preacher, maybe a Christian that you respect, if you're having problems in a marriage, in the church, at school, whatever, we have also independent classes besides this in the homes to help out. Find out what's going on, see what we can do, even if it's just prayers. Okay. This is what God designed it all for, that we have support groups, that we have the support and the leadership and the knowledge that we need in order to make it, not only in this life, but for a safe journey into the next. So if there's anything we can do to help, please let us know as we stand to sing.